Also, we've been still by and large raised and trained with this idea that you'll just get a symphony job or get some other traditional jobs like it's still the last century. And so we're still kind of in that mindset where we're not used to thinking like, how do we actually operate like an entrepreneur completely? How do we actually advocate for ourselves and go after what we actually need to live and not worry about the judgment of other people?
Hello and welcome to the Musician Toolkit, episode number 71. My name is David Lane, and it is great to be with you once again. I hope all of you are doing well today. If this is the first episode of the podcast you've checked out, welcome and thank you for giving it a try. If you've been with us for a while, thank you so much for continuing to return. On a transparent note, I'm glad that I found time back in early March to get 8 weeks of material, minus the intros and outros, along with artwork and promo clips for these episodes, all prepared in advance. I was able to do that with something that I'll probably elaborate on in a future episode, and that is batching, which is not just taking an extended block of time to focus on one thing, such as podcasting, but it also focuses on a specific subset of that activity, such as doing all of the scripting or the outlining of several episodes at once, and then recording all of the episodes, then editing all of the episodes, then creating all of the artwork, and so on. Anyway, that's a bit of a tangent. I have taken on a project that is monopolizing my time over the next 2 to 3 weeks to the point to where I can barely take these few minutes to finish each episode and upload them. I have a guest today, but I imagine it may be a month or so before I have another guest. My vault is starting to get low, but thankfully I still do have a surplus of content to post here, thanks to my earlier batching. And there are a wide variety of topics coming up that I'm looking forward to sharing. Speaking of content, I'm hoping you'll reach out to me to let me know what you think of today's episode. Do you want more episodes like this or fewer episodes like this? I would love for you to tell me by going to my website, davidlanemusic.com, and filling out the contact form, or you can just send me a DM on Instagram at davidlanemusic or Facebook at davidmlanemusic. 29 episodes from now, when we celebrate episode 100. Between now and then, I'm going to be looking at everything about this podcast, from the music theme, the format, the logo design, the name of the podcast, production elements, topics, the lack of video other than the promo clips, just about everything. And considering what the podcast will look like going forward from episode 100 or 101 onward. Now, here's what I can tell you for sure. It will still come out with a new episode every week, probably Monday, as it always has. It will also be a topic that I know something about and relates to what I do, so almost certainly related to musicianship. But it's also going to feature more of certain types of episodes and fewer of other types of episodes, and that is where your feedback comes in. What are the episodes that keep you coming to this podcast? So a little bonus. If you're not comfortable telling me directly how you feel about a certain episode, if that just seems rude or something like that, how about this? Send me a message and just introduce yourself. Tell me where you are as a musician. Are you a hobbyist who isn't taking lessons? Are you a student in high school looking to become a music major? Are you in college or grad school at the moment studying music? Are you an established professional looking to improve aspects of your art or your business? So this is the other side I need to figure out. Who exactly keeps listening to this podcast? So any feedback that you can give is not only welcome, but it's really necessary for me to make the decision that I think is the right one going forward. Today I'm talking to Brian Witkowski of The Lucrative Artist. Brian is a trained vocalist with a DMA who now coaches musicians and other artists to change how they think about money and to grow what he calls their money voice. Brian sees a problem among musicians who are not always comfortable charging what they think they should be able to make as a musician, or maybe not charging as much as they should because they are convinced that they shouldn't charge more or they feel guilty about doing so. If that sounds like you, then Brian will do just about anything he can to help you overcome that. His social media posts are often entertaining, and he loves to give some very direct nudges that might feel uncomfortable, but definitely will get you to think. Here are just some of his recent posts. If colleges can expect their tuition to be paid in full on day one, why can't you? If landlords don't have to charge less rent in February, why should you charge less for months that happen to have holidays? Most of your clients didn't go to music school, so they didn't get indoctrinated in the same ways of thinking about money. You'll likely feel a lot more uncomfortable discussing your fees than your clients will. And then just one more. If you have advanced degrees, advanced experience, and you can deliver advanced results, you deserve to charge an advanced fee. So we're talking about money today. And this is the point where I might say, if that makes you uncomfortable, well, now you know and you may want to skip this episode, but instead I'll say the opposite. If the talk of making money makes you uncomfortable and you aren't happy with your current income and you are an aspiring or current professional musician, then you absolutely should check out today's episode. Our main topic is how to create a valuable VIP experience so that you can justify a higher rate to a client who is looking for exactly what you offer. There are only two ways to stand out as a musician for hire. One is to be the absolute least expensive. And as we discussed, that has some serious drawbacks for the long term. The other approach is to find an offer that pays you a good income. At the same time, it also compels your prospective client to say, I can't believe I get all of that for that price. This approach is harder because it takes imagination and it takes time to craft your pitch and your package, but it's an absolute necessity whether or not you're a performer, a teacher, or a composer, and you want to make a good living from doing what you love, but also you don't want to be overworked. So without any further delay, here's my conversation with Brian Witkowski. So Brian, I feel like we've had this interview scheduled for a while, and you know, life has happened for both of us, but it's great to finally be able to talk to you today on this podcast episode.
Likewise, thanks for having me.
So if people were to find you online, And you're pretty easy to find. You're everywhere. I think they can even find you in the artist formerly known as Twitter, and quite a few other places. You're actually probably one of the most active people I know on Threads at the moment. I know a few other people on Threads, but of people that I've met before, you're active on Threads. You're on Facebook, Instagram, and I think if people only knew you that way, they might know you as the guy who's always talking about money to musicians, and which is good because we're going to talk about money to musicians on this podcast today. But I want to first talk about you as the musician. So just so that people know that you're not just, you know, the money guy, but you are coming from it from a understanding of what it is to be a musician. So what would be like the Wikipedia summary of your life as a musician to this point?
That's an interesting way to put it. I went and majored in music, and I aspired to be an opera singer and a professional singer and voice teacher at the college level, and did all the right things to check off those boxes along the way. My dad was a professor, and I was basically blessed to be told by him that I could just be anything I wanted if I, you know, worked hard in school and everything. And so I did all that. I got my undergrad, then had some disappointments. Then I, you know, learned over that and had some breakthroughs technically, and got my master's and then got my DMA, and, you know, I was just on track to doing all the professional things related to that. And then along the way, I had my fair share of ups and downs financially and so forth. And just the way the career works, it's very easy to let your emotions get the best of you, and you don't make necessarily the best choices as far as which engagements to do and what teaching jobs to take and so forth. And it's very easy to, you know, be in a perilous financial state. And it kind of set me on this pathway where I wanted to kind of get to the bottom of why we are so susceptible to not, you know, doing well with money or not making enough. Why do we doubt ourselves? Why don't we earn enough? You know, is it just that everybody else is evil and greedy and doesn't care about us? Or is there something else that we have to work on? And so it kind of sent me down this, you know, entrepreneurial journey where I'm helping people kind of figure that out and get clear on what's really holding them back and overcome their fear of simply asking for more from the right people and not being afraid of sales and not be afraid to ask for help. And that's what I'm doing now.
Right. Do you still perform? Do you coach? I know you coach, you know, financially. Do you ever do anything with voice, anything at all?
I still do a few lessons here and there. And I'm starting to do more sales trainings where I'm incorporating the voice teaching into it. Cause when you're selling, it's not just like you're selling yourself on stage in a show. You gotta, you know, it's a different kind of process and a different performance per se, except it's not a performance. You gotta be an authentic, relatable human.
Right.
And you gotta leverage your tonality and, you know, pay attention to what you're doing. And it's a different kind of setup. So it's kind of like I'm taking a lot of my original college voice teaching and theater teaching and applying it in different ways there. But also I teach some lessons here on the side, and I still have some former students that I keep in contact with, and I still perform. I do some church gigs here and there, and COVID's kind of been a nice excuse to get out of the rat race where I probably did too many gigs that kind of weren't worth doing. And, you know, stuck in that mindset where we just got to have another line on the resume for the sake of having another line on the resume, you know. And, you know, we kind of live in fear that if we don't like do two or three roles per year, there must be something wrong with us and we're not good. And it's so easy to fall into that, you know, defeatist kind of thinking. So COVID was my excuse to take a break from that. And I'll eventually get back into it when I develop my voice and do some more operatic work again in the future.
You had an article, I was going to save this to the end, but I feel like we can talk about it now. You have an article recently that you published, it's on Substack, to take the gig or to not take the gig, I believe is very close to what the actual title is.
Yeah.
I started kind of thinking about the line that I originally wanted to do, which was to be a film composer, and kind of what I thought was necessary was to say yes to everything, which is, you know, which involves, you know, a lot of basically free to very cheap gigs. You know, it's like it's for the credit, basically, is what you're doing some of these, because you're sometimes getting jobs with filmmakers who, you know, they have no budget at all and they don't expect to make anything off the film, you know. So it's like you really can't, that value argument, it's very hard to make because they don't expect to make any money and they're not getting any, they're spending their own money, you know, so it's really kind of a labor of love. But it is an IMDb credit, and you can find people online, you know, they say that they're a film composer, go to their IMDb page, and it's screen after screen of movies you've never seen, but it's there. And then you'll have people like, I'll just throw him out there because he's a great example, Michael Abels, who, you know, he is the film composer of Jordan Peele's films such as Get Out, Up, and Nope, and a bunch of other things. But before making a big splash with Get Out, his IMDb page is empty. He did no film scores. He had another life. And then you take the... I don't have their names at the top of my head, but the two composers who did the Stranger Things, they had never done films before. They kind of came at it from a different angle. It's kind of a couple of different approaches. It's like there's what I'm starting to see with film music is that quantity does not equal success necessarily. In fact, sometimes it seems to perpetuate a mindset of staying towards kind of the bottom of the feeder when it comes to this particular industry. So that's just one example, but it's kind of, is that what you see in other lines, is like, is quantity, yeah, not correlative, or is it even inversely proportionate to quality?
Sometimes, especially like for actors and singers and opera singers, for example, like there comes a point where if you do too many of the really cheap gigs, the people on the other side of the audition table are going to notice the pattern and they're going to question why haven't they done something bigger elsewhere. And so there's definitely, it's a tightrope to walk in some ways, but in other ways it's all about just cultivate your own audience, do your own thing, and stop trying to, you know, only do what the gatekeepers of the previous century said to do. You know, we're kind of in a new world where on the internet we have so much more, you know, things we can, so many more options to put ourselves out there and really be artists and build our following. And, you know, instead of the gatekeeper, you know, instead of having to beg for them to give you permission to let you in, you know, bring your crowd with you and you stampede and just push past them.
Yeah, so this is a spoiler so I'll try not to elaborate too much on what I said. I've already recorded basically the meat of an episode that's going to come out probably a little later. And it was something that I said that I expect that if I isolate this clip, I expect the hate to come. So, you know, we'll see. You know, if anyone sees it at all, we'll see how that goes. I actually have come around to the point. I used to be one of those people that would share all the memes that's, you know, that kind of condemn the word exposure. And I've changed my mind on that a little bit. I actually think there's a formula that might be free plus expensive instead of just consistently cheap. You know, like I would say there's a place where if you're trying to get some higher profile gigs, but you don't have the experience and you're willing to volunteer the time to get that experience to build that skill set, that might be better than saying, I need money all the time, even if it's low rate and if it's a lower profile. But the idea is that you get that experience and you do a good job and you get better at it. And then people come to you and now you can charge a higher rate for a higher profile gig. That's kind of my theory on that. I don't know if have you thought about that? Is that something similar or would you push back on that?
Not entirely. I think we're in an age now where we just have to think really deliberately about, you know, the through line and what's the long tail going to look like. Like, I've had a gig once where, yeah, I only got a few hundred dollars for a show and I had to sacrifice all my, you know, nights and weekends for 2 months. But then I got a private coaching client 5 years later. So, I mean, something to think about is, you know, what relationships can you cultivate and what other opportunities could the door open? And don't just do it for the sake of, you know, meeting that immediate adrenaline rush and, you know, making the immediate people in your life happy. Like, think all the way through about, you know, what the ramifications could be.
Let's talk about limiting beliefs that musicians have. So, you know, it's very interesting to read The Artist Way by Julia Cameron. It is one such book that comes to mind. And, you know, there's a lot of books that kind of say that there's a myth that a lot of artists have, but I think especially musicians, that it's kind of noble to, you know, stick to your art and not think about money. And I think there are select few examples of composers, classical composers, that we could probably pull and point to, and Schubert is one that comes to mind. But it's not really fair, because it's not that Schubert wanted to be poor, it's that he was disgracefully manipulated by his own publishers. And yeah, you know, he did not get the money that he was owed. But there are so many composers that and we could say Bach, for example. Bach was not known until 100 years after he died, you know, as far as the great composer. But Bach had like a church job, full-time church job in a country during a century where it was, you know, that was an ideal gig. You know, he and Telemann, and then you have like Haydn, you know, found his way to work for a prince. Handel was willing to go to England, you know, to work for royalty. And of course, you know, we can't dismiss composers like Franz Liszt, you know, who actually made a great living, you know, while they're around. But what are some modern, because this is a little novel to me, because this is something that I've seen you post on social media, and I have to just say, well, obviously you're coming across people with a certain mindset, and somehow I'm not coming across those people with a mindset. So I'm trusting that you're in tune with something that's going on out in the world as far as limiting beliefs that musicians have. So what are some of the limiting beliefs about money that you think are holding most musicians back?
I think one thing is sometimes I like the joke that maybe people study too hard in their history class and they've internalized the life of Schubert or something else like that. And, you know, almost to a default without even thinking about it. It's like in the back of our head where we sometimes might make certain decisions that are, you know, self-defeating because, you know, we're supposed to suffer and, you know, we're not really worthy of the money. And a lot of times, you know, another limiting belief is that, you know, just a lot of the same limiting beliefs that everybody has society-wide. But I think musicians, you know, it's actually emotionally charged, let's just say. So there's more baggage around it. And also we've been still by and large raised and trained with this idea that you'll just get a symphony job or get some other traditional jobs like it's still the last century. And so we're still kind of in that mindset where we're not used to thinking like what, you know, how do we, you know, actually operate like an entrepreneur completely? How do we actually advocate for ourselves and, you know, go after what we actually need to live and not worry about the judgment of other people?
Yeah, there's probably a lot of words that musicians don't like to hear, like entrepreneur is one, CEO yeah. is another. Yeah. And is it a problem how the media portrays people who are monetarily successful regardless of the career?
I think the biggest problem is that we only see the success at the top of the mountain and you don't see people at the bottom. You know, kind of like you see those memes with the glacier, you know, underneath the ocean. You don't see, you know, all the work that goes into it. We only see, like, you know, Taylor Swift right now. We don't see everything, all the work that she put in to get to where she's at, or, you know, name any other star or celebrity, same kind of thing. So I think part of it is we've glorified the success, but we've, you know, the struggle to get there, it's almost like we've shamed that. We, you know, the way social media works, it's like we're programmed to try and find ways to shame people who are working their way up if they haven't quite gotten there. You know, one little failure, it would kick you back down kind of a thing. And, you know, we love to glorify being at the top, but then we also like to glorify, you know, tearing people down. So it's hard to get your head around sometimes. And we got to stay focused on the long game and stay focused on ourselves and the audience we're most meant to serve and not worry about all the critics and everybody else out there. And
yeah, I was just thinking, like, what might keep musicians from embracing the idea of charging what they're worth and keep trying to grow monetarily? And I know we each have our own individual feeds, you know, based on the friends that we have and so forth. But it just seems like every time Jeff Bezos comes up or Elon Musk, back in the day, you know, Bill Gates, you know, someone like that. Whenever one of those names kind of pops up, it seems like it's always to point out like how badly they treat their workers or how they're ripping off, you know, the government for taxes. It just seems like that's the news that comes to mind. And it seems like the message is don't be mega rich because you must be evil if you're doing that. So I guess what do you tell people who come up with the idea, who actually think that there's a correlation between being rich and, you know, or making a lot of money and being a morally good person?
I think part of it is to stay focused on earning that money in a way where you are being of service with integrity to the right people you're meant to serve. And, you know, you're not engaging in various labor practices and other things that are not so nice, I guess you could say. And I think part of it is we need to not worry about, you know, if we have the problem becoming a billionaire, then we'll wait till we get there. But don't assume that we're going to suddenly be like that if we simply are earning enough to live. And I think most musicians, the real struggle is simply, you know, putting a roof on their head and having enough to actually live a decent quality of life. You know, it's kind of part of this, you know, starving artist kind of mentality, kind of, you know, we think we have to, you know, nurture everybody else and take care of everybody else who's starving kind of a thing. And we don't realize that we actually have to be role models for how to charge more for the people we're serving as well. If we're not charging enough, if we're not, you know, able to be, you know, sustainable, then, you know, no one really wins in the end. You know, no one's even going to want a free lesson from you in the streets if you're homeless. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
There is, you know, we got to, you know, honor our worth and honor what we actually are serving for and realize that if, you know, I like to joke with some of my clients, I tell them, tell your students, if they're good enough to study with you, they're good enough to charge more too. You know, there is an abundance mindset there where, you know, the rising tide does lift all the boats and we just need to, you know, start a new kind of trend instead of the old school trend where you're supposed to just charge as little as possible. Whereas if you find the right people, they'll pay the right price. And you can, there are lots of value propositions you can create to make it worth any kind of price you want.
There's a quote unquote rule out there that I've heard a lot of people say that this is a myth that needs to be broken. So I just want to get your thoughts on it. And that is that you're supposed to choose your rate based on what others are charging around you. You're supposed to be competitive within your local area. What would you say to that?
If anything, just know what they're charging and pick a higher number, mm-hmm. because you'll stand out more from the crowd. And I always tell people too that it doesn't matter what everybody else charges. What matters is how passionate you are about what you're doing and you really understanding the value and being able to communicate that to the right people you're meant to serve. You know, as long as you have those things in line, then what everybody else charges doesn't have to matter. The people you're most meant to serve. And most of the time, it's not like we're talking about, you know, going from, you know, someone down the street, you know, charging 50 to you charging 1500 or whatever. It's usually like we're talking an extra Uber Eats delivery difference at most or something like that. So I think we need to not worry too much and stay focused on what we're worthy of asking for and, you know, why the right people that we're meant to serve will be willing to pay it.
So that's going to lead into kind of the next thing that I think we should talk about. And that is, you know, how you kind of stand out when someone is looking to hire you, whether you are a musician, whether you are a music teacher, you know, whatever it is, whatever the gig is that you're trying to make a living from this. And the way I understand it, there's two ways to do it. One is that you can be the least expensive option out there. And the other way is that you can provide the most value out there. And you, along with countless other coaches, I think would say there's a lot of shortcomings and limitations with being the lowest price option out there. And I feel like we should probably just maybe discuss that. Like, what are some of the problems that you might have if say you are a piano teacher and you are intentionally charging the lowest rate in the area?
Yeah, I always like to point out that there are two kinds of buyers. There's somebody who's always, they want the cheapest price. And then there's somebody else who actually sees the true value in what you're offering. And, you know, with the former, what we run into the problem of the actual value we're offering is not in our product, it's in the lower price. And before you know it, those tend to be the worst kind of customers and clients. They want the freebies, the refunds, and, you know, they do all the other difficult things that they can tend to be more problematic. And they don't, also because they paid less, they don't necessarily take it as seriously. Whereas if you stay focused on the value and stay focused on those right people who are willing to pay more for the right reasons, then you don't have that problem as much. Nice. And another thing I always talk to about too is to think about people who are not necessarily on a fixed income, but think about if you focus on clients who have the ability to change their income to earn more. That's another way to get around this problem is, you know, focus on serving people who actually have the means to pay or they have the means to earn more, and don't just focus on trying to, you know, serve all the people who are the neediest. Let's, you know, we want to make sure we have a healthy combination of clientele so that, you know, if there's ups and downs in the market, we're not suddenly losing all of our students or clients because the economy went down. So we want to make sure we're serving a wide variety of people who have the ability to earn more.
Yeah. The one thing that I love the, you know, quote from a, you know, podcast that I heard not too long ago, like there's no advantage to being this. There's no advantage at all to being the second cheapest, but there is to being the most expensive. So if you're low price, like if you're not going to go all in and be the lowest, you know, then you're in no man's land. But if you're at the lowest, you know, I could see where that might fill your studio if you are of value. But as you say, what kind of students and what kind of parents and what kind of expectations are you filling the studios? Like you're probably not getting the types of students that are going to really fulfill you as a teacher, because there is that adage, you know, that you get what you pay for. And I think subconsciously that influences the types of clients you get. So if we can kind of just say that as a musician, as just from an artistically satisfying experience. And of course I just use that as a teacher. Also, you know, What about like if someone's if you're trying to get hired to play for a wedding or something like that, what would be like, I mean, what do you think the outcome would be like if, say, I'm going to charge, you know, $50 or whatever the lowest rate is, you know, to try to get jobs as weddings? What would be the consequences there, do you think?
Yeah, I like the joke that with weddings, you know, I asked them, are you trying to save up for a divorce? You know, so, but, you know, are they willing to invest in their musicians the way they're willing to invest in the wedding cake and the dress and so forth? You know, I think sometimes there is a tradition. Most of the times it's like we're usually friends and we're asked to sing for free sometimes for weddings, but we can't be afraid to advocate for what we're worthy of charging, or at the very least work out something else where, because you're singing at that wedding, can you promote some other things, sell some other stuff down the road, get other people at the wedding to subscribe to, say, your Patreon or your Substack or something like that. So, you know, there's always some other kind of exchange of value, even if the budget doesn't allow for it otherwise. We just got to keep our minds open to those possibilities.
Okay. So if we can say that, you know, you don't want to be in no man's land, and being the least expensive option, you know, it has pros and cons, but I think it has more shortcomings, and it definitely has the lower ceiling. And as we kind of said, it's kind of hard to get off of that. Like, there's so many film composers whose IMDb pages are full of credits, but again, of things that you've never really heard before, because it's hard to get out. It's hard to get out of the cellar, you know, no matter what field you're in. So let's go with the other option, and that is producing value. So you like to share New Year's lists. I think you had 23 for 23. You've got 24 for 24. Oh, yeah. And these are 24 things that you can do to create a VIP option for your services. And I think the idea was not like necessarily like this is what you do for everybody, but this is like your more Cadillac, your more expensive option. Yeah. But you could probably incorporate it in. And so we're not going to share all 24, but I think we're going to share about a third of them. So I'm just going to call out a few and just... I'll call out, you know, one or two at a time and just have you kind of elaborate on that. So one of the things that you could do is have lenient canceling or rescheduling policies. So I guess maybe just kind of elaborate.
We can leverage the time and, you know, how we can use that to our advantage, where, you know, there are people where I like the joke that time blindness might be a disability someday, because more and more people, it's like they're looking at their phones more than look at the clock, and they're always late to things. So that's something we could leverage in our business, where it's like, okay, you might have something going on, you have a busy life, or you have other needs that need to be met. So, you know, give you the option of practically buying 2 hours of your time for, depending on the kind of flexibility you need, or you have some other, you know, privileges in there where you charge a premium to, you know, have more lenient makeup policies or something like that. Because there's a lot of people where, you know, we got lots of demands, we got different things going on, and you just never know what's going on these days. So, you know, if you offer that, instead of just, you know, offer that upfront as a benefit and a perk, then the right people would be attracted to paying more for that.
Yeah. Well, there's a siren and I'm going to, okay, went the other way. All right. back to this. Yeah. I meant to elaborate actually before we got into the list. So this is a list of things that, you know, you can do to justify charging more, you know, so you're charging more, but you don't want to just charge more. You want to be worth the money that you're charging. So being more accessible is one thing. So this is something that I've often, you know, had to think about as a private teacher, is to try to let the parents, let the student know, I'm not just here, you know, on this weekday at this time, you know, when you come in, this is when you get the active one-on-one instruction, but by paying a certain fee, you know, you have these other perks. And one of them might be, if you're having trouble during the week, send me a text, you know, send me an email, tell me what your problem is, and let's try to keep you on track so that you don't feel like you've got to wait 7 days to fix this something that's not going well.
Yeah, it's kind of like I heard Wayne Dyer say it's the space between the notes that make the music or something like that.
Right.
And it's kind of like the time between our lessons sometimes is where the real breakthroughs happen. And, you know, if we can do a call in real time, that could be the biggest difference maker as far as if somebody's having struggle, if they're struggling while practicing or if they need something else or if they had some other kind of epiphany or whatever. So that's, you know, some kind of, you know, not necessarily 24/7 all night long access, but, you know, the ability to send texting privileges, phone call privileges, or other points of contact, you know, that kind of access sometimes is more valuable than lessons itself.
I lump these next two together. So they're time buffering. So you have time buffering for additional flexibility, but also time buffering for additional privacy. So talk about those a little bit.
Yeah, I think one thing to think about is if you have like a high net worth or high profile or a celebrity type of client, you know, they'll probably happily pay double to make sure they're not going to have to deal with other stuff going on. So you just, something to think about there is how can you accommodate them and, you know, make their life as easy as possible. I always like to say that if, you know, one less thing for them to think about or worry about is one more reason you can charge more. And that could be worth sometimes thousands or who knows in value for them. So don't be afraid to, you know, offer that as an extra VIP perk.
Yeah, you know, we're in an age where people like myself are encouraged to document everything and share everything on social media, including, you know, the clients, you know, that are getting married or the people who are in the lessons. And, you know, there may be people who are looking for someone who doesn't feel the need to do that. You know, that doesn't have to, you know, take a picture of this wedding that they're playing for, that, you know, that I want to, you know, as the person getting married or as the father of the bride, I want to keep this more private. So, you know, that leveraging that, you know, that could be something that also goes into as a perk.
Yeah, another thing to think about there too is like another reason not necessarily publish the high profile VIP rates online, because you might have some clients where maybe they don't want other people knowing what they're actually investing in or something like that. So that's another thing to think about too, is I always tell people, if you have an extra higher profile VIP option, maybe do a starting at and pick a price point as opposed to telling people exactly what it is publicly completely. So it's mm-hmm. something to think about there as well.
Yeah. Okay. One that you have is open office hours. So like regular live Q&A, et cetera. So, you know, just kind of expand on that. What are some ideas for having open office hours as a perk?
Yeah, something as simple as, you know, Friday at 1 p.m. Zoom, anybody can join, ask anything, you know, it's as opposed to, you know, any other kind of group offers or whatever. So, and sometimes if you hear somebody else ask the same question you ask in a group setting, that could be sometimes more valuable. So, you know, offering those kind of perks where they have access to if they need it. So something as simple as that. And, or also, you know, if you have a, you know, say an actual brick and mortar studio, you could have an open house kind of hour where people can come in and maybe use the studio spaces as practice rooms or something like that. So there's lots of creative ways we can use the space when teaching otherwise is not going on to, you know, create more value.
Yeah. So I've skipped over, I mean, that's kind of three or really four that I picked of out of maybe the first 13 on the list, which all I would kind of, if I was to summarize, it's providing a VIP option with your time. You know, it's like various ways that you could think about, like, I'm available beyond the time that you originally signed up for. So, and you know, just to kind of, you know, I want to kind of keep in some variety. It's easy to talk about teaching because it's what I do. But I've also, I've had a brief season where I've, you know, been available to do weddings and things like that. And I think one of the things that always comes up is, you know, do I also go to the dress rehearsal? Can I give a consultation? Can I actually have a, you know, do I meet only on Zoom or do I meet in person with the bride? And do I only do it once? Do I do it twice? Do I give a demo of what they're going to hear at their wedding? And it just seems like, well, you can do as much as you want, but factor that into your rate. Does that sound kind of where you're heading with that?
Yeah, you could have a big package deal where you have, you know, the whole nine yards all included, and you know, an extra concierge service and support and help, and other expertise that you're lending on demand, or just simply show up for the gig. You can go from just a small fee for just showing up on that day and doing a quick rehearsal before to, offering a big, a more, holistic experience, I guess you could say.
All right, number 15 on your list is one that I didn't quite fully visualize, so I want to hear your take on it. And it's miscellaneous secretary duties, such as help with paperwork and other important materials, or simply having a working printer. So tell us about that.
When I was in high school, I had a voice teacher who would give me her score, and I would have to go all the way to the hardware store to make the copies and bring it right back after my lesson, even though she had a printer in her house. It was the weirdest thing. She had the full, HP, copy scanner, fax, full nine yard system, that was popular back in 1999. And so I think in this day and age, so many people don't even have printers at home because you don't really need them. I like to joke that it's cheaper and more cost effective to live near a FedEx office and do the actual printing you need to do on demand there than to even bother with buying the cartridges and, making sure the printer still works and stuff. So it's one courtesy that a lot of people would actually appreciate is just, get that paperwork stuff out of the way and, have access in case they need to quickly print out a copy of their score or something like that. But another kind of secretary duty to think about is is there a competition that your students all take part in? Where is it better if you actually hold on to the forms and the other things and you're responsible for making sure it gets mailed out as opposed to putting that burden on the student, and then suddenly the student doesn't do it, they forget, and before you know it, there's no motivation left to keep coming back to the lessons. So something to think about there is, we're just in a weird time where a lot of, the traditional paper pushing habits and ideas that worked back in the day, a lot of people aren't used to. So if you can take those kind of burdens off their shoulder, that can really be an easy way to add value, and it doesn't necessarily have to cost anything aside from a postage stamp. Right. And then one other secretary thing to think about is if you have, say, a multi-teacher studio, use one of the studio spaces that's not being used as a hotel concierge business suite, so that the parents who are waiting around have something else to do, or some space to do things that they need. That's, something to think about where you can add more value and it may not necessarily cost too much more.
Right. Yeah. I've seen the memes that go around. What do people use their old printers for? Or, who actually has a printer? It's like, we have continuously had a printer because we're always printing things, for some reason. I mean, we still do that, even though we both have iPads and, use digital things, but there's always things to print. And, I've got an online student, just yesterday I was asking if they had printed this arrangement that I did for them, a week ago. And they're like, no, we haven't been able to get to Kinko's yet. Now, unfortunately, that is someone who is in many, at least 1,000 miles away. So I can't, I can't do that. Now, I guess what I could do is I could print it off and mail it to them. That would be an example of a secretarial service, right?
Yeah.
So I can talk about the 17th one on the list because this is one of my perks that I'll talk about. Access to your digital library or a custom curation of online resources related to your work or the materials you recommend. So I'll just go ahead and say this is an idea that I can bring forth, and maybe you can, add other ideas, maybe some things that I'm missing. I have something that's going to probably grow at least 10x, maybe 20x over the course of the year from where it is right now. But it is basically everything that I use for a gig, as far as lead sheets, as far as classical pieces. I'm just going to share it. It's available for active clients. And, I'm kind of working on polishing this, but I'm going to get the Dropbox subscription where I can password protect it and change and give out that password and change it once a month, and it's just basically that gets sent out to those who are active clients. You have access to what I expect is going to be in excess of well over 1,000 documents. But not only that, everything that I've ever arranged for a student, I've got a very, very nice simplified version of you know, one of the pieces from Anastasia, the musical. I've got one for the Pathetics, slow movement sonata of Beethoven. I've got several pieces. There's a specific version of Happy Birthday that was from a movie that a student recommended. And so I've got that and a bunch of other things. And that is all available as PDF that you can download, you know, as PDF or print, you know, if you have a working printer. What are some other uses of like digital materials that you could see as examples?
Yeah, you could set up a community around that material and maybe give people an opportunity to put out their thoughts and or share feedback or, you know, share with each other. And, you know, maybe you have two different students who might be interested in the same piece, and that might be an opportunity to find out that maybe there should be an introduction there or something of that sort. So there's always a community feature you probably look into. And then just anything else that you tell, you know, students that they usually need, if you just put it all in one place, you know, if you make yourself a one-stop shop for everything, you know, that convenience right there, even if it doesn't cost you anything, there's so much more value that's otherwise would not be realized.
Yes. I feel like encouraging collaboration is one of those things that's going to stand out more and more as we go forward. I mean, you know, a conversation we could have, but I didn't plan for it and it would make this episode very long, is going forward in the age of AI, because AI is here, whether we like it or not. And it's not going to become less of our lives. It's going to become more of our lives. And, you know, there are certain things that we may, some skills that we may have that are going to become way less valuable. But there's other things that are going to become more valuable. And I've come to realize more and more, live music, being the ability to go play live where people can watch you play, is something that actually is going to go up. Whereas if you're trying to make money from recorded music, that's already gone way down. You know, it's like, how many millions of streams do you have on Spotify, which is hard to do, by the way. You know, how many millions of streams though do you have to get the equivalent of selling even 50 CDs, you know? And yeah. I'm not sure, I don't know if it was a joke or not, but when they had Spotify Wrap, Weird Al Yankovic came on and he had a video talking about the several million streams that he had. And he says, and from the bottom of my heart, I just want to thank all of you for the $8 that I got from royalty. He goes, I can't wait to go spend this at Burger King or whatever. Yeah. Or he's a vegan, so he might have said something else. But, you know, that... It's in the way that only Weird Al can. He kind of made a very strong point there. So recorded music,
do a re-recording of Just Eat It, right?
Yeah. Recorded music is, you know, I've had to change the way I think about it. Now people will come on and talk about why you shouldn't do Spotify. I really think, you know, be careful of these conversations where you can't put it back in the box. It's pointless. It, you know, railing against the model of Spotify on social media is kind of fruitless. But understanding what it does is something else. And that is, as a lead generator or a lead nurturer, it's still very valuable. It's you know, probably less expensive than paid ads. It's a place where people can find your music and hear it and see, you know, what it does that you're all about. And, you know, you do that often enough, you know, you might get a little pocket change from that, but it's very hard to sustain, you know, build an income from royalties of, you know, music that's streaming. But on the other hand, if that streaming makes people want to come to your live concerts where you can now charge more than you ever could before, you know, it's just a different way of kind of thinking about going forth to AI. Anyways, I'm getting off topic. I'm sure these are things that you've thought about too, right?
Yeah, I think streaming, it's one of those things where we need to just let go of the idea that it's somehow going to be our sole source of income anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it was ever really intended to be that way. And I think at this point, you have a better chance at actually landing like a multi-million dollar contract, like a celebrity on Spotify, than you will of canceling Spotify.
Yes.
You know, so I think, it's also, we got to, you know, think like Taylor Swift. She made like every album that comes out, there are four different versions you can buy. If you buy them all together, it makes a puzzle piece or picture or whatever. And you know, there are creative ways with the merchandise around the albums that you can be make a bigger profit these days. So we can't be afraid to just get creative and, you know, create those Easter egg shells or is that what is the, you know, the things you find in the, all the merchandise or whatever, you know, just got to think differently, think outside the box and, you know, make a more, you know, bigger experience out of it all, as opposed to just expecting, you know, the streaming companies to solve your problems.
So this next one involves using your network. And so this is the 19th item on your 24 for 24 list. Help your clients find complementary service providers that they can trust, such as coaches, mentors, accompanists, tuners, like piano tuners, repair technicians, agents, VAs, etc. So this sounds like, you know, this is a good, this is a good incentive to continue networking, to kind of build all of those. But, you know, like I'm kind of thinking on the list, you know, maybe the person hiring you to play their wedding, maybe they haven't found their photographer yet. And maybe you know some good wedding photographers, you know. I mean, typically this is what a coordinator does, but yeah. maybe they're going out of order. I can't tell you how many times that I have given out a certain piano tuner's phone number, you know, and that is a network connection that I am able to use. You know, people say, and you know, are always asking, you know, do you have someone you can recommend? And I do. And so, you know, just maybe elaborate on this. Just talk about like what are, you know, first of all, I guess maybe building up that network is probably key, and then how to utilize it.
Yeah, one way to think about it is you could refer them, or, you know, because what there's value in it, you know, knowing that there's someone that, you know, their own teacher, you know, trusts and recommends, and, you know, you're more likely to trust someone that your teacher says to get as opposed to, you know, what's on Craigslist or whatever. But another thing to think about too is like maybe you could just be the one who directly hires them, and you just include that in the total package price so that they don't have to worry about it. So like if you're, you know, say if it, maybe you're basically, you'll pay the piano tuner on demand to come and, you know, tune their piano or whatever, or something like that, where there's, that's a perk or a benefit or something to an extra VIP experience there. So that's one less phone call they have to make. So something to think about there. But also there's, you know, there's always options for referrals too. If you refer somebody, you know, scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, that kind of thing. There's, that's alive and well in the world. And, you know, people are always willing to help other people. And, you know, there's always either a direct monetary benefit sometimes, or there's something, another indirect business benefit. So there, you know, there's always, just be open to helping other entrepreneurs if all else fails. You know, entrepreneurs who help other entrepreneurs, you know, they are the most successful ones.
Nice. And this this last one, you know, this is one of those things that I don't know, this would be a perk that you would outline, but it's something that could probably help with your word of mouth, is the way I would see this. And you know, that it makes a good impression on your client, and you know, it's something that will probably cause them to want to more likely refer you to other clients. And that is to attend their live events, auditions, performances to offer additional support. Yeah, I see some teachers online that like never fail to mention how great their student did in a performance in like a musical or, you know, or an opera or something like that. And they point that out, but they're also pointing it out with the pictures they took from the audience. You know, bravo to this student right there. And they'll tag the student if they're on social media and so forth. So this does seem like just a great opportunity to be not just the person who's the teacher, who's the mentor, but to actually be what you are developing them for. And it seems to me, it doesn't even have to be the main thing they study with you. Like they might be a piano student and they're having a choral concert, like they're also in chorus, and you just happen to be there to support them.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, I guess there's value in, you know, if the teacher, you know, acknowledges you and your performance and so forth and publishes on social media and lets the whole world know that they're, you know, training the next rising star, and, you know, there is that publicity benefit to it. And another one, originally when I put on the list, I was just thinking of you being the teacher that warms them up before the performance, and you're there to encourage them and give them any other, you know, either musical or emotional support that they need to get the performance over with, and, or, you know, do their best or whatever. And another, and to tag along that, something else I always tell clients to think about is, what if you are going on tour with them? That's something else you could like include in the package, or, you know, because there are certain people where, you know, they have voice teachers and coaches that are with them before the performance, or they're there to call out whatever. And so something else to think about is where you could offer, you know, going to their individual shows, but also going on tour with them. What could that value proposition look like? You know, there are lots of different ways where we can help our students that we, you know, go beyond just what we do in the studio. And we don't just have to go out of obligation. We can include it in the package deal, and it's worthy of a higher price tag for the right reasons.
So again, that's 8 out of 24. So that's 1/3 of your list. Exactly. And, you know, there's 16 other things on this list. But to kind of summarize, this is just kind of the thing that we've been talking about. If you're not going to be the cheapest option, you want to provide value. So just thinking, you know, beyond, if you're a music teacher teaching the instrument, or if you're playing for a wedding, beyond showing up for the ceremony, what are things that you can put into a package that would justify that being sometimes a lot higher of a rate? But something, you know, it's possible that you could probably take the things that you've been building, things that are no big deal for you, that don't take much time, but that someone, when they're hiring you, they say, I get all of that for that price, you know, and all of a sudden it becomes a great deal, even though your income has probably greatly increased than if you're just, you know, showing up to teach the lesson, you know, whatever that is that day. And there's so many things, you know, we haven't even thought about. And one thing I just kind of thought of, this was not on my notes, but thinking of the potential for growth, you know, like what could you do with your life as a career? It seems to me that if your value exceeds to the point to where you can't really do it on your own, you consider pricing so that you can hire other people to do it for you, you know, to help you with that. So it could be that, you know, your wedding music comes as packaged with a photographer or something like that. I mean, are there ideas of ways that you can kind of create your own little company for either teaching or for, you know, being a live performer?
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, whatever comes easiest to is probably the thing you should charge the most for. Yeah. And that can feel counterintuitive at times, but you stay focused on your zone of genius, and then you're creating value that's worthy of that higher price tag, from which you can then afford to hire other people to take care of the other things for you. And before you know it, it's just, you know, it gets easier and easier, and you can make more and more because you're hiring other people to take on the things you're not as good at, and you're doing what you're really good at, and, you know, everyone's happy.
Yeah. It's funny, talking about easy thing, my dad told me, so I was about maybe in high school, maybe 16, when I came up with a way, as someone who used to have the hiccups all the time, I came up with a way that I could, with no props, in about 30 seconds, get rid of hiccups anytime they happened, every time. And I started, and I told my dad that when he had the hiccups, and he implemented it, and it went away. And he said, you should sell that. And I never have. But, you know, I'm now starting to think, can I put that as a perk? You know, I have to really go outside the box. I teach piano, I teach composition and theory, but I'll also teach you how to get rid of your hiccups anytime you have them.
Yeah, I always tell people, hold your breath for 30 seconds and just keep your throat relaxed, and they might go away.
Yeah. I won't say my technique because it might monetize it. You know, it might become a perk.
Okay, fair enough. Well, but yeah. Take mine for free for now.
Yeah, that's fine. So I will share this PDF as this 24 for 24 that on the episode notes. But talk about, you know, what all that you offer. We haven't really talked about this. The Lucrative Artist is your name, your company name. Just talk about some of the things that you offer yourself in various packages, and also like what are some free things and that people can go and find for you from you.
Yeah, basically, you know, there's career and business development support that I offer in a private and group settings for people who need help figuring out how to get started with their business or get over, you know, what's holding them back. And, you know, I got certified in the money mindset training program that can kind of help people understand the relationship with money and get over, understand their buying patterns and maybe their clients' buying patterns, and, you know, see how they can leverage that to, you know, create a pricing model and confidence in what they're doing in a way that allows them to earn more with ease and grace and not worrying about all the, you know, emotional baggage that we all have around money, right? Mm-hmm. And then I also offer another group program that I'm offering this summer called Grow Your Money Voice, where I'm helping people really get over their fear of selling, their fear of charging more, and the fear of asking for help. Because in the end, you can bring in anything you want as long as you work on those three things: getting better at selling, getting better at understanding your value, and feeling and having integrity with asking for more, and then not being afraid to reach out for help. You know, if you can keep doing those things, three things, and keep working at them, you can, you know, the world can be your oyster. So helping people really overcome the limiting beliefs and create an empowered plan to really get better at those skill sets and, you know, put things into action so they can actually bring in more money and, you know, normalize earning more for all. And so I have, there's my blog posts on my website, thelucrativeartist.com. And there's also the lucrativeartist.substack.com is where I have some more in-depth articles and things to help people kind of understand, you know, what to do with, you know, different business ideas, different tips and tricks and strategies that are current, and what else to do to get over these different beliefs and so forth. So really helping people overcome that and then get on their way to making more.
Right. And you're also on, as I mentioned, you're on social media everywhere. Is that, is the Lucrative Artist, is that your handle?
Yeah, that's my handle on Facebook and Instagram, and a slight variation of it on the other ones, I think. But right. You can definitely find me there. And
yeah. And, you know, and I'll say, you know, I always like to, you know, to prep this, you know, I think people who listen to this can tell that you're, you know, you're very helpful. I think you have a knack of knowing that, you know, you're going to post some things that are going to stir the waters and also challenge some mindsets. So it, you know, people might not find what they wanted to hear, but I think that's good. You know, it's like we need to be challenged at times.
Yeah. And, you know, money is, it's a touchy issue for a lot of reasons. A lot of us still, it's like our parents were born in the Great Depression, or my grandparents were born in around 1930. And then my parents were born. And it's like all those frugal habits and, you know, other forms of discomfort around money that just kind of carries over from generation to generation. And, you know, we got to break the generational curse, if you will, and not, you know, try and be like what worked in 1930, but let's stay focused on what's going to work in 2030 and beyond.
Right. All right. Well, it was great to finally get you on and chat about all these things, and I encourage everyone to go, you know, seek out all of the, basically the wealth of materials that you have all around growing your money mindset. And, you know, there's so many things that we didn't talk about, but, you know, things that certainly they can reach out to you and get your input, and also, you know, find a lot of the resources that you've already put out there already. So, again, thanks for chatting with me today.
Thank you.
And that's going to wrap up episode 71. As a reminder, there is a link to Brian's free list of 24 ways to create a VIP experience. There are 16 more ways that we did not even mention, so go ahead and check it out. Also, he let me know that he's getting ready to launch his own podcast that is at least tentatively called the Lucrative Voice Podcast in the near future. So you want to look, might want to look for that, but also go ahead and follow him on social media that we mentioned at the end of the interview to find out more about that when he launches. And you can also, in the show notes, go to the Lucrative Artist website and see more about what Brian offers. He's got some free material along with some things that you can also sign up for. If you like this episode, please share it with as many people as you think might enjoy it. And also, if you haven't done so already, it would be great if you would be willing to leave a 5-star rating, if not also a review, especially if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you're listening on YouTube, please click the like sign and hit subscribe. By late spring or early summer, I am going to start putting out a lot more non-podcast content on my YouTube channel, so it would be great to have you following already. Once again, send me a message to let me know who you are, what you value, and feel free to let me know if you think today's episode is more or less of what you'd like in the future. Again, that wraps up today's episode, but I'll be back with you again next week. Until then, thank you for listening.